The future of hundreds of thousands of recipients of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program is now in the hands of a panel of judges in New Orleans. Earlier this month, the three-judge panel heard appeals by the Biden administration, some left-leaning states, and some DACA recipients who are attempting to keep the program alive after a district court judge ruled the program unlawful last year. Since that decision, the Department of Homeland Security has been able to renew DACA permits for people already enrolled in the program. But anyone who has applied in that time has been stuck in a state of limbo, as the department is now barred from accepting any new applications. Politico reported the panel of judges appeared unconvinced by the Justice Department's arguments, and our next guest sat in the courtroom while it all played out. Karina Ruiz is one of the plaintiffs in the case, a dreamer who has been in the country for more than two decades. Her parents brought her there when she was just 15 years old, and she told me she remembers the journey.
It was difficult. I remember when we crossed, we were stopped a few times. That was also very hard because I didn't realize the way that we were going to cross. I remember it was dangerous as well. Crossing the border wasn't easy. It was something that sometimes I try not to remember because it was difficult. It was hard. We were in a house with like maybe, I want to say 30 people. And in a room, we were like with several other people. We just stayed that one night in a corner of that room. I remember thinking that anything could happen to me. And my parents, when they realized how dangerous it was, they didn't want my siblings to come and make that journey.
This was more than a decade before President Obama would introduce the DACA program. By the time that happened, she was 28 years old. She had already lived through the failure of the DREAM Act and the passage of Prop 300 in Arizona, which tripled her college tuition when 70% of Arizona voters agreed that undocumented students shouldn't get in-state tuition.
I remember that. In that time, it was very uncertain. We heard about a possible immigration reform. 9/11 happened and everything changed. And I remember seeing young people on TV and then protesting, undocumented and unafraid, and getting arrested even. And that allowed me to see that there was other people like me.
DACA was what she called the light of hope she had been waiting for all these years. Now she's been living here under the protection of the program for another decade. And talking to her about it, it's clear just how much of her life has been dictated by this policy. I spoke with her more about that and her work with the next generation of DACA recipients.
You know, every day we wake up, it's like, okay, now what? What happened with DACA? Like, what court is he going through? There's courts that have helped us. In New York, there's a court that actually, after DACA was stopped, there was a court that reinstated DACA. That was when my dad passed away. He was living with me in Phoenix, and he got COVID. And we all got sick with COVID, I remember, and it was very hard because I wish I would have been able to help him more. He died, and it was in November, like 4 days after his birthday. And I remember we were celebrating each year his birthday, and that year we couldn't because we were all sick with COVID. When he passed, I was very sad because I didn't know what to do. I knew, and I talked to my mother about conversations my dad having of going back to his pueblo, to his town where he's originally from, in Ejutla de Crespo, Oaxaca. And I wish that he would have had the opportunity of going back, you know, by his own foot. But thanks to one of the courts in New York who reinstated DACA, I applied right away for emergency parole, and they granted, so I was able to bring my dad to be buried in Oaxaca. Many people don't have the opportunity to bury their loved ones on both sides of the border, right? And there's so much pain and family separation that comes with it. So to me, when I was presented with the opportunity of fighting for this protection, although it's not permanent and it's not the perfect solution, to me, it was so important to be part of that fight that was won by community. So when I was in that court this month, all of those things were going through my mind, listening to the judges, talking about our lives, saying that, you know, a certain percentage of us would go back if the program ends. I thought, I shook my head as hard as I could, saying no, as I was in front of them, because mm-hmm. I'm one of those that would not leave. I have children and grandchildren. I have my mother, and so many sacrifices that my mother has made that I made Arizona my home, and we're going to fight to stay there.
So now much of your work is advocating for this next generation, right, of DACA recipients who, you know, kids who are as young as you were when you were brought here. I wonder if you think about, like, what would happen to them? What would happen to you if this goes the other way, if DACA were no longer around?
You know, that's a question that I've been asking myself for the longest time, thinking about different scenarios of what the outcome would be in the opinions with the court. And I come to the same conclusion. My home is in Phoenix, Arizona. I will not go away. The program, it's ended. I think I will, agitate our people and say that we need a solution, something that's permanent. I would go to Washington, and if I need to get arrested again, I've done it twice, I'll do it again. I shave my head. I would do anything to show the American people that I'm calling Arizona my home, that I deserve a chance, that I want to stay there. And right now, as you mentioned, it's so frustrating and disappointing to see young people that were not 15 when people were able to apply for DACA. Right now, young people that are turning 15, they could send their packets to immigration, but immigration cannot process them because of this order from this judge. So it's very hard. I work with those young people that are in high school, these young immigrants that had dreams and aspirations of a better life, of education. And when we tell them that their application, they can turn it in, but it cannot be processed right now, you can see it in their face. You can see the despair. You can see how they, and I remember that feeling when I was coming out of high school with uncertainty, when the out-of-state tuition rule was implemented, I felt like there was a dead end. I had a semester and a class left, and I had to drop out because I just could not afford to pay three times the tuition. And so I ended up going one class a semester. So I figured it out, and I graduated in May of 2015 with a Bachelor of Science in Biochemistry. And I like to tell that story to those young people because it's important that they know that there is hope, that they should not take no for an answer. They should not limit themselves. There's private scholarships. There's, they can fundraise. So there's ways that they can make their dream of a higher education a reality. Right now, there's a proposition in the ballot where people can have a chance in Arizona to vote for in-state tuition.
All right. That is Karina Ruiz, a DACA recipient, organizer, executive director of the Arizona Dream Act Coalition, joining us. Karina, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for telling your story. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on the show, we'll hear from one of the next generation of Dreamers whose application for DACA is on hold as this lawsuit plays out.